concerts.com.
What's going on? What are you still working on? Tanya and Dunga Skigon, then on the what Ahun Sadache, Unguahuan, and Hadi Wanodas, and the Aboriginal voices, Oscar Dewa Nyawar Oscar, Ne Jota FM, CFRC.
Douglas, it's 7 o'clock.
Already, boys.
Already.
Tuesday evening's just going so fast.
Oh, that's nice. Couldn't go fast enough for me. It's 7 o'clock. You're listening to CFRC 101.9 FM. We're broadcasting from Carruthers Hall, Queen's University, Kingston, Ontario. Mm-hmm. And this is hour two of the Aboriginal Voices. I've just been handed this to read, to perform, Doug?
Yes.
All right. So it says here that what inspires me to write is my ancestors, my passed on friends of what could have been if we were all here. I think of how things were. Most times I sit outside on my deck and play my guitar, and the sounds and memories I have to inspire me to make up things, and I put them into my music. I have a 3-year-old little daughter who made me so patient, and I stop and I think about how wonderful this little human being is. And what she does to me, it is her movements and her words of how much she loves.
Okay, here we go. You want the song?
What's the song?
Young Enough.
Oh, there you go.
George Leach.
Trying to put
by George Leach. How's that?
That's great.
That goes with what you were reading. You know, the next one that we're going to do is also talked about his daughter and the influence that she had. And Mike Byrne, and he's from Tobik First Nation. And that's in New Brunswick.
Is it?
Yeah. And you're not allowed to go and look for it right now because you're at the helm there, so you got to wait for me.
I don't know that I want to.
He's an award-winning and a 2018 Olympic Games singer-songwriter. Did you know that?
You can medal in singing and songwriting?
No, he had his songs played there in the 2018 Olympic Games.
All right.
And they featured him.
Oh, cool.
And he's been recently nominated for 3 Native American Music Awards.
Oh, good for him.
Pretty nice, eh? He's also been at District Avenue's music video. And he had a song, Revival.
Oh.
And it was featured in the 2018 Winter Olympics as well in South Korea. But the song I wanted to play was one that came to me about a year and a half ago. And it was one of those ones that were sent from the outfits that want to highlight new indigenous musicians across the country.
Okay.
And I want to thank the folks who have been doing that. And, you know, we're going to play Mike Byrne's song. What's the song called? No Words for Goodbye.
Like this morning, I'm not Kingston. Looking to conserve water and save money? Utilities Kingston is once again offering its popular repurposed rain barrels. They help conserve treated water, reduce your environmental impact, and give new life to materials that might otherwise end up in a landfill. Rain barrels are just $71, including delivery, and are sold at cost to support sustainable water conservation. Order yours today at utilitieskingston.com/rainbarrels.
Hey there, Kingston. Looking for the latest in arts and culture? Join me, Ellie Stern, Friday 3 to 4 p.m. for the Kingston Curator. Featuring interviews with artists themselves, I'll explore what's happening around town. From live music and theater to gallery shows, festivals, and more. Catch it live on CFRC 101.9 FM, stream at cfrc.ca, or listen anytime on the CFRC Podcast Network. The Kingston Curator, your backstage pass to Kingston's creative scene.
Your library, your story. At the Kingston Frontenac Public Library, books are just the beginning. A library card starts a lifelong adventure, connecting you to everything you need to inspire learning, creativity, and fun. With 16 locations and plenty of online services, using your library has never been easier. Study in a quiet space, meet friends and learn new things, or explore the world through a magazine or a museum pass. Become a part of our story. Visit your local library branch or find us online at kfpl.ca.
Hey, hey, hey! You want to kick the summer heat and get a nice treat? Don't hesitate to make a date to visit Old Farm Fine Foods. Pizza, frittata, sausage rolls, sandwiches, soups, and more are ready and waiting to get in your belly. Plus, you can also buy fresh and frozen food to prepare at home. Pop into the shop Monday through Sunday between 8 to 6 at 204 Berry Street. And don't forget to follow Old Farm Fine Foods on Instagram at oldfarmff to get the scoop on the latest goodies. Old Farm Fine Foods, comfort food you can count on.
Hey, 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 hey Frosted Flakes good? They're
right. The following story may be difficult for some of our listeners to hear. If you need support, please reach out to your local mental health crisis line. Additional resources can be found at adaytolisten.ca. This is A Day to Listen 2024 with your host, Kim Wheeler.
Sago Anin, my name is Kim Wheeler, and this is A Day to Listen. Each year, the Gord Downie and Cheney Wenjack Fund partner with Bell Media to bring you conversations with Indigenous movers and shakers, thinkers and doers, motivators, and those who inspire. My conversation on this episode is with the amazing Tina Keeper. Tina was the first Indigenous woman to play the lead in a prime time drama. The show is still incredibly popular today, and if you guessed North of 60, give yourself a pat on the back. Tina was recently named to the Order of Canada, and after this interview, you'll know why. This is my conversation with Tina Keeper.
Anse, Tina Keeper in Indigenous. Hello, everybody. I'm Tina Keeper. And I am from North House Cree Nation on my father's side. That's where my membership is, and citizenship is with North House Cree Nation, top of Lake Winnipeg, Treaty 5. My father was Joe Keeper. And on my mother's side, I'm from Muskrat Dam First Nation in Treaty 9. My late mother was Phyllis Beardy.
You have had a long career in film and television, but you weren't always an actor. In fact, we first met when we were both really young. I was in junior high school. You were my student teacher.
So, yes, I was 19 years old. I was actually part of a program for Indigenous women put on by the Community Education Development Association here in Winnipeg. And at the time, the executive director was Greg Selinger, who would then later become a premier in Manitoba. And I ended up working with them. And I had the good fortune to be placed in your school. It was a middle school. And I had an office. And I had a supervisor who would come in and check on me about once every 2 weeks. And he basically said, okay, do something here. Create a relationships with the students, the teachers, and see how it goes. I was like, okay. So that's how that job went. I ended up becoming a sub for one of the teachers on a regular basis. And I did the programming, after school programming is what I focused on. So that was our girls club we had.
Yep.
And I had so much fun with that. There was an art teacher at the school then. So the art teacher used to help me. You know, remember we would do batik and kind of all these different artsy things. And then in the winter, we would do our snowshoeing. All these activities that I felt like it was fun. I felt like a combination of my art teacher and my dad, because my dad always took us out every weekend when we were growing up. He moved to the city when I was 5. And then it was like his mission. Every weekend we would do different things. So we all learned how to snowshoe and cross-country ski. My father, for sure, I could feel it in the winter where you really miss the outdoors. And my mother in the summer, you know, because they were both from the north. So we spent a lot of time doing these activities. So that's all I tried to do, was pass on these things.
You made a real big impact on not just me, but I think other young Indigenous girls in that school when you were there, when you were running the girls club. You know, you were a role model back then for us, but we didn't have that word role model. We just knew that Tina Keeper was like this really cool young woman who came to hang out with us, and we could talk to you about anything. You were never judgmental. You were very open. You were very kind. You were very caring. For me, growing up in a white family, because I was adopted out, that was really important to me. It was really important to me to have someone like you around. And while it was a very short time, I remembered you my entire life. And then the next time I saw you, you were on my television. You were on my television in North of 60. And I was like, that girl was my student teacher. Yeah. How did you change your career path from teaching to acting?
Well, by the time, at 19, by the time I was, we'd met, I was already part of the Indian Métis Friendship Center in Winnipeg. You know, was such a dynamic place at that time when I was growing up. My family were very much a part of that center. And there was a youth group there that did theater. So that's how I got involved. So I was already involved with that theater group. And the theater group, were made up of young, like sort of the first wave. I've always called us the first wave of indigenous, urban youth, right? We were really impacted, for those of us that, grew up in our families. Like I was so fortunate and others were as well to have like role models too that were, Ojik was one of my parents' friends, like as we were growing up when we lived up north, they lived there too. And her husband worked with my dad. The other person was Norval Morso. He was a friend of our extended family. He would come and stay at our place when he was in the city. So all these people that were just extraordinary. My father introduced us to writing at that time. Like by the time I was 17, Franz Fanon, the works of, James Baldwin and Alice Walker and Maya Angelou, all of that was very much a part of my younger years. People that came from oppression and that were also creating glorious works of art. And I think that had the biggest impact on me. I would say probably Ojig had the largest impact on me in that I just felt that I could be an artist too. Like I could create work. And from the time I was very young, like from the time I was growing up, we lived in Cedar Lake, which was, there was a community there that was being forcibly moved because of the hydro impacts. So my father was working with them because my father spoke Cree and could read and write English. So he could deal with all of the materials that were coming in from Hydro and the province of Manitoba and the government of Canada. They hired him to work with them. And he documented that process, which later became the basis of a large claim for them, in terms of their flooding by Hydro. So we actually lived there when the community was forcibly moved. My father said that community was located on one of the top marshlands in North America. He said that the people there were so kind and so gentle. He said, I was really surprised. I'd never met people so gentle. And he said, and I realized like they'd always had an abundance of food. Like they didn't ever have to worry about starvation. I kind of grew up with this young life of being really impacted by people that were really significant in how I thought about the world. And the other person, of course, was my mother, who grew up in a very remote, isolated place as well. And her grandfather was Chief Samson Beardy, who signed the addendum to Treaty 9. So she was the first daughter of the first son. So she had a very special relationship to her grandfather, Samson. My mother, she taught us how to bead. Like that's how I learned how to bead, which was another thing we used to do when I was at the school with you. So I learned how to bead and do, make mukluks and belts and bags. And, I did learn how to do all that leather work and bead work when I was a little girl and make fishnets, all these things. I do go blueberry picking and fillet fish. We go out to fish camp. So even though we moved to the city, like when I was five, my mother had told me at the, last years of her life, probably like maybe the second last year of her life, that the reason we moved to the city when I was this age. She said, with the boys, because I have older brothers, she said, with the boys, I didn't really think of it. It wasn't until you were turning school age that I realized they're going to come and take the kids for residential school, like if we stay on the reserve. Mm-hmm. And she said, and I just told your dad, like the moment I had that thought, I told your dad we're moving to the city. She said, because I didn't want kids to have to go. And her parents, her father had, in his last days of his life, had apologized to her for letting them go. He said, I should have hid you kids in the bush. I shouldn't have let you go. But, you know, the RCMP had been arresting people when her generation was going. So, you know, that really played a big part in our life. You know, the residential school impacts. And so that was what we did. My mom said she just literally told you, my dad, you're quitting, you're getting another job. So he actually got a job where he could kind of still do work with the community. So that's why we ended up in the city. And I remember it so well. Like, I remember seeing Barbies for the first time. I remember being on a swing set, like in a schoolyard. I remember being called a name. I remember like being fascinated by the streets, you know, that they were like straight and there was cement and everything was in order. But my mother was very committed to community development, like not that word per se. She would never, ever have used that word. She was very old style. Like, my mother's first language wasn't English. She would say, you know, you have to take care of the people in the community. You have to take care of the people that are weak or can't take care of themselves. Like, that's our job. And so I started volunteering at what is now the West Broadway Optimist Center. I started volunteering with my mom when she was volunteering there. I was 14. So that's where I started. Like, I started volunteering, and then I volunteered at Stella Mission. And I just always ran these kids clubs. My mom was one of the founding members of Agape Food Kitchen. Wow. The Harvest, the food bank. That was another one of my first jobs too. So I just had this early life that was really full of, you know, full of energy, very full of art. Like, I loved art. I loved artistry. I loved creation. I loved thought. And I loved people. Like, you know, my mother had that. And so that's sort of where it all began. And I ended up going to this theater group. We had a theater group with, like, Jim Compton was part of it. Errol Canistino, who ended up, you know, also on the show. Allison Dubois, Kathy Menard. All these, like, you know, really cool people. My sister Joy, these brothers, they were the Moore brothers, M-O-A-R. They were from Barron's River. And we had a theater group. I'm rambling on here. I'm sorry. Yeah.
No. I'm fascinated.
This down memory lane.
Like, I love this history of both Indigenous theater in Canada, as well as all the things that your parents did.
There's this really sophisticated era, I think, that has never been brought forward. Like, I don't think that people understand the level of commitment that they had in terms of their own sense of self-determination. My father was part of that group too, where they created the Manitoba Indian Brotherhood, the National Indian Brotherhood. Like, there was this whole body of people across the country that were creating these organizations, because prior to 1951, they weren't allowed to hire lawyers. They weren't allowed to have post-secondary education, right? By the time 51 happened, you had this group of people that were very, very committed towards creating organizations. And it was for justice. It was for their rights. The idea that the wealth of this country is based on our land, our resources. We never gave up our desire to have a good life and to take care of our families in our own land. You know, that is, it's that basic. You know, when I hear about like First Nations, like for instance, right now where they're fighting with the federal government around this money for the graves in the residential school areas. And I think, you know, that's our money. That's our money this federal government is built on. This wealth of this country is built on our wealth. We shouldn't even be asking for the money. This is something I think that is so important for us to remember as First Nations, our Indigenous people, I guess as Indigenous nations, is that there is no way that we should be the poorest people in this land. You know, there is no way that there should be homeless shelters with Cree names or Indigenous names, you know, like that is ridiculous. This is our land. These are our resources. You know, what has happened is that this country, you know, through their colonial practices, have tried to destroy the people in numerous ways. They undermine our people. They undermine our authority for our own people. And right now, I think that we are in a place where we should be in a recovery. And that recovery should not have a dollar cap on it. That recovery and reconciliation should be the federal government and the provincial governments walking hand in hand with us towards whatever innovative practices we need to regain recovery. Like, because the fact that we have so many people that have broken lives, that is a direct relationship to those policies. And I always feel like I've been so fortunate to have my family intact because both of my grandparents, sets of grandparents, and both of my parents, like they grew up on the land, especially on my mother's side. They weren't, they didn't have a store in the community. They didn't have a white church. They didn't have, you know, there was a church, but it was built by the people. They ran it themselves. Like, so there wasn't this sense that there was an external authority. That people still took care of things in their own way. They didn't speak English. My grandparents never went to residential school and my external family. So even in that, like even in the way they related to me as a child, they were very affectionate. You know, like that was one thing I could see, which was really broken by residential schools. Like my mother wasn't affectionate to me as a child, but my grandparents, my grandmothers, who would be like my great aunts, like those would be called your grandmothers. Like they treated us like babies until we were like 8 or 9 years old. You know, and my grandmother would say, "Oh, come on in." She'd say, "Lay down, listen to the rain." You know, when we were back home.
Mm-hmm.
I was like 8 years old. I'm going to have to go lay down for a little nap and listen to the rain. It was so cute. Or nine, right? And they'd come and they'd hold you and kiss you and hold you. Like, so even that, like I thought the whole physical thing had been so distorted through residential schools. So that even like just something as simple as a hug, you know, kiss on the hand or a kiss on the head, those things which were so natural and so loving, those have all been taken away too, right? You know, my life was really focused on being part of an effort towards bringing a truth back or something like that. Sometimes I talk about it as a wave or like a era, but it really was who we were as, you know, as Cree people, as Indigenous people.
Yeah, you just had all these incredible role models around you. And it wasn't like they were trying to be role models. They were just living their lives and doing their thing and embracing what they were passionate about and not taking no for an answer.
Yes. Even though I'm getting old, like I'm like getting so old. And I feel like I'm just beginning. Like, I just feel like there's so much work to do still.
You've done so much already. Like, all the work you've done in community, the work you've done in film and television. We haven't even talked about your political career yet, where you were a member of the Legislative Assembly of Manitoba.
No, I was a member of Parliament for Canada.
Oh, you were a member of Parliament?
Federal, yeah. Manitoba MP, like a federal
Manitoba MP. What was it like for you being one of very few Indigenous people in the...
Yeah, so I was only the second First Nation woman to be elected into the House at the federal level. And I think that the other members that... So there was Ethel Blondin before myself. Nancy Kerouac was still there when I was there. She's Inuit. Prior members were also Cecil Keeper, who was my father's cousin. So there's been two keepers. And then Dr. Wilton Littlechild, you know, who is also one of the Truth and Reconciliation Commissioners. I think he was also the first lawyer in Canada. Yeah, so there wasn't many. Like, literally, I might have been the fifth or sixth First Nation person to be in the House. Dr. Wilton Littlechild had been our Aboriginal legal resource because there wasn't even lawyers in the House that understood Aboriginal law. So when I was an MP, one of the things that I experienced was I was trying to, you know, we're all trying to work on Jordan's principle. You know, I did a private member's bill on Jordan's principle, like using a framework that we have a treaty right to health, that there should be a fiduciary obligation with the federal government for health to First Nations, you know, under a First Nations Health Act. I was able to work with Dr. Willie Littlechild to table my private member's bill on the UN Declaration of the Rights of Indigenous People at the same time that they were like tabling UNDRIP in Switzerland. The other thing, of course, was the IRS compensation settlement agreement had come during the time I was there. You know, I had to speak to that in the House. And like my father said to me when I got elected, you know, my girl, go and represent our people. Like Canadians have all those other people to represent. Work for our people there. And just remember, you know, change may not happen right away, but, you know, say what you need to say, get it on the record. And look to who's been there before you. Like, because, you know, like, say, John Tutusis, he came there in 1943 talking about the residential schools. You know, that was the late Gordon's father. And John had been a friend of my father's. So, like, I was able to have, you know, people like Phil Fontaine was there, you know, and, you know, Ovid had come. You know, these were peers of, like, of my father's, right? So I was able to have all these people say, look at this, look at that, say this in the House. You know, look at this legislation, you know, and we had an office in Seguin, like, so we had a First Nations office. We're the only one in Canada. We were able to, like, work with, you know, survivors from across the country that were doing their common experience payment. I mean, it was a great, honorable, like, I felt so honored and so privileged to be able to do that work. I was able to go meet with people in the, you know, in the all the communities and be there the first time they ever had an MP in their community. It was a great honor. I loved it so much.
All this incredible work that you've done, the experiences that you've had, and the people who have helped form you, how does that all relate to the work that you do now?
Oh, yeah. So as a producer... Kissed Again Pictures came out of it was like a fork in the road one time, and I had been offered a job that I felt was very important that I was really thrilled to have been offered. But at the same time, I was asked to create a film company to manage a project that APTN was piloting. I really wanted to take the job and I didn't know what to do. Then they came back with a second offer, and then they came back with a third offer. And then I had this dream that I was in this little garden. The next day, my cousin, who is from the north, but he lives in New York, and he comes and he flies through Winnipeg to go work as a nurse up north. So we were having dinner and I said, I have these two offers. I don't know what to do. I had this dream last night. And I was in this little garden, and I don't garden in real life, so I can't stand it. I don't do it. But I was really happy in this little garden. And I said, I don't know what to do. And he said, honey, you just need to stay in your garden. Once he said that, I knew, like, I need to do this TV project. And turning down that other project was like that other job was so difficult. But that's when I started Kistagan. So Kistagan means garden, to garden in Cree. And now I feel like that work, I kind of like sort of like danced around it, you know, for a long time, because I always thought I want to go back to politics. And when my kids were older, I really feel like one of the things that I find so thrilling about the work is that I can make opportunities for people. Like, I have relationships with people, you know, especially here in Manitoba, that are people that are in the unions, people that are decision makers that can work with us to help, like, really create a viable future for Indigenous people in this industry. And I don't think that I ever really felt that before. Like, it felt like they were kind of like one-offs, you know, like you could work on this project, but you're not going to, which is what a lot of Indigenous people in the industry have said, you know, like I get hired for this one project, but then nobody will hire me again. So I feel like, no, we're like change. We have an opportunity to change the industry. We have an opportunity to work with them, not just for Indigenous people on Indigenous projects, but Indigenous people like embedded in the industry, and they can create their future in the industry. So I feel that this is a real opportunity. This is something that's been placed in front of us. The show is doing so good. You know, we've been number one on our first two seasons. We have our third season that we just finished shooting.
The show you're talking about is Acting Good.
Acting Good, yeah.
Yeah.
I want to be part of building that industry here. Like, I want to do another show. I want to bring another show to Manitoba. And I want to bring, you know, writers here producing their stuff. I have a good network and it can benefit people. I want to be able to use my resources and my networks, you know, in terms of bringing on actors or bringing on talent or writers or connecting producers together. Like, however that is, I want to offer this up so people can have it and it becomes part of their opportunities, you know, moving forward. Because that's what I feel like I have right now. Like, I have that and I can give that. And what I'm finding is that people love our stories. They love listening to our stuff. They love watching our stuff. And we do succeed because that's who we are.
What a powerhouse Tina Keeper is. I still consider her one of my role models. Tina currently produces and acts in the hit TV show, Acting Good. Season 3 should be out this fall on CTV Comedy. Want to hear more great conversations with Indigenous icons like Tina? Check them out online at adaytolisten.ca. I'm Kim Wheeler. Chimigwech for listening.
This is A Day to Listen, in partnership with the Gord Downie and Cheney Wenjack Fund. Find the podcast and more great Indigenous storytellers at adaytolisten.ca.
Street and narrow, broken arrows, walking down the sweet grass road.
That is Walk With Me from Adrian Sutherland, who received a Juno nomination earlier this year after releasing his debut solo album. And this song actually moved an entire classroom, because you heard from an elementary school teacher in Ontario who reached out after his students were inspired by this song.
One day as I was driving into work, I heard this song, Walk With Me by Adrian Sutherland, and it just struck me. It was a beautiful song, and shared it with some of the students to see what they thought about the song and what it meant to them. And we looked at the lyrics and we started learning about that, and we thought maybe we should reach out to Adrian Sutherland, the artist, and his management team. And so we did that, and we asked for permission to make a little video for his song. And they wrote back to us and said, we love the idea. Would it be okay if we went a little bit bigger? And they asked if we might be be interested in participating with them to make the official video for the song. So we said yes right away, and since then, for the next few months, that's what we've been working on now. The project for us has been about creating awareness. We are creating awareness for Canada's history, awareness about the residential school system and Indigenous people, and also it's a journey towards reconciliation and a journey towards community.
When we first heard about it, we were excited and wanted to support them in every way possible to make that happen. So I was just about in tears when I first saw that video, and it's just really powerful and a heart-touching video that they put together. For me, it's always been about the music. It's always been about healing spirits or trying to create awareness and understanding about some of the issues we face as Indigenous people in this country.
I am so excited to be here with all of you, and I want to thank you for coming to this assembly. Because of your passion, it led to almost a year-long project where we were working on a video called Walk With Me. Who remembers, just with your hands, that video, Walk With Me? So I want to extend to you a huge thank you for your perseverance in making this project come together. I also want to tell you how very proud I am of you, of each one of you. So please help me welcome the person who wrote and sang that song, Indigenous singer and songwriter, Adrian Sutherland.
First of all, I just want to say hi. And I'm really excited to be here today. I wanted to come sooner, but I couldn't. But this is the first chance for me to be able to come and visit and just say hello. And thank you again for that wonderful project that you guys brought to life. It absolutely, it touched my heart, and it continues to touch my heart, and it's done the same thing for so many others that I know.
Walk with me. If I follow your steps, will I see?
What are your fears?
I'll use one example. Navigating some of the rivers at home are pretty scary. I had trouble just shooting big rapids on my own. It was kind of a fear, you know? And I think for me, it's like fear can sometimes control us, and it's important for us to see what we're capable of doing, you know? And sometimes we have to find ways to overcome those fears. Because if we don't, we don't learn what we're capable of doing, and we don't build courage. I have fear of me being rejected too, you know, because of some of the traumas I've been through as a kid, you know, and I went to Indian Day School. I suffered, you know, abuse there, and so I went through a lot of rejection, so I think that's where that comes from. So I have that fear of being rejected, or my music being rejected, or being rejected as an artist or something, so. For me, I think I know, like, a lot of the hope lies within our young people and our youth, and to be coming from a different perspective and maybe a different culture. And I know I've been trying to speak about it, sing about it, write about it for so long, but then to have a group of non-Indigenous kids, you know, get behind it is like, whoa, that's something else.
Indians left. There's millions of them in the whole continent of America, which includes South America. And one someday they're going to be asking for their rights. I wouldn't be surprised if they weren't standing next to the black people too. So it's either give now or die later.
Time for you to lock in. Freedom's why we rockin'. Walking that we blockin'. Enough with all the talking. Time for you to hop in. Got the people watching. Stopping and we stomping with knowledge that we dropping. Dismantle institutions. Mishandle distribution. Systemic contributions to those in prosecutions. Media illusions. Weakening solutions. They carry racial bias just like the Constitution. This evil ain't a friend of me. I'll break who you send to me. Working with the government, you're working with the enemy. The eagle gives me energy to wait for my integrity. Abolish any governance while breaking their supremacy. Forget about the laws when you're standing for the cause. We're fighting for our lives and the ones that we have lost. This is for my chalk, written on sidewalks. Listen to my talk, this is for my part.
We're gonna stand, we're gonna fight. The retribution's in our minds. We're gonna stand, we're gonna fight. The revolution's on the rise. We're gonna stand, we're gonna fight. The retribution's in our minds. We're gonna stand, we're gonna fight. The revolution's on the rise.
Does my presence make them tremble? Why they keep on staring? Don't care about discomfort, the Kens and the Karens. Think of where they settled, think about the parents. Complicit in behaviors with the privilege they inherit. Need to break the cycle, need to take a stand. Need to check your friends, start to look within. Need to be the idol, be the helping hand. Need you to defend the people being hit. Walking down the city blocks, assaulted by the city cops. See them acting gritty, watch, never trust the city tops. Plenty time to rethink, defund the precinct. Every time that we blink, we run to be brink. The empty apologies, lack of restitution. Listen to our prophecies, it's our resolution. Forget the petty policies, break the persecution. Positioning our sovereignty, time for revolution.
We're gonna find the retributions in our minds. We're gonna stand, we're gonna find the revolution's on the rise. We're gonna stand, we're gonna find the retributions in our minds. We're gonna stand, we're gonna find the revolution's on the rise.
Revolution.
Put it in the past. They say that we can reconcile it. What if I can't? See my blood. It's in my does it feel like we're on the edge, staring down a certain day? Why does it feel like the story ends before it starts? We were here in these faded memories, so we were here. So we were here. And these disappearing words, even when they start losing meaning. It's in our blood. It's in our blood. Oh, it's in our blood. I guess you know, just like the snow, we fall and then we fade away. A month, a day, a week, a year, just like to say that we were here.
watskan nuora aduste wakwego. Tanya dahaskigo, then on zewa dahusa dache, ungahuwa na hadiwa nodus, nene Aboriginal voices, oska dewa nyawa oska, ne jota FM, CFRC.